Radio Nacka, fredagen den 1 oktober 2004. Klockan är någon minut över 7. Vi har 8,2 grader här i Nacka just nu. En mulen och även disig, dimmig morgon, vilket vi inte brukar ha. Men en trevlig liten fredagmorgon i alla fall. Och i natt så hölls den stora debatten mellan senator John Kerry och president George W. Bush. Bush har ju lett i opinionsundersökningarna nyligen och John Kerry har legat efter. Men John Kerry är en betydligt bättre talare. Han ser tjusigare ut, han uttrycker sig snyggt och har en bättre röst. Och även i den här presidentdebatten som gick klockan 3 svensk tid för 4 timmar sedan och varade 1,5 timme. Även här så var president Kerry den som hade den starkaste stilen vad gäller röst, utseende och sätt att prata. Och George Bush var starkare på innehållet. Ja, det är min åsikt. Ni kan ju döma själv. Jag tänkte att jag skulle spela upp så mycket som möjligt av den här debatten och börja omgående med det och inte prata så mycket. Den är 90 minuter lång, den här debatten. Och vår sändning här är ju en timme, så jag hinner inte spela hela, men... Och det hänger väl också på om tekniken är med mig här. Internet typ väl kommer fungera. Men Jim Leary är det som är moderator för debatten som alltså hölls för 4 timmar sedan och var 1,5 timme. Vi hinner höra 1 timme om tekniken så vill. John Kerry, George W. Bush är den stora debatten som faktiskt kan avgöra valet i USA. Det ska bli 2 debatter till, så det här är den första i en serie. Vi ber oss till University of Miami, Coral Gables i Florida. Herr Jim Leary.
Good evening from the University of Miami Convocation Center in Coral Gables, Florida. I'm Jim Leary of the NewsHour on PBS, and I welcome you to the first of the 2004 presidential debates between President George W. Bush, the Republican nominee, and Senator John Kerry, the Democratic nominee. These debates are sponsored by the Commission on Presidential Debates. Tonight's will last 90 minutes, following detailed rules of engagement worked out by representatives of the candidates. I have agreed to enforce their rules on them. The umbrella topic is foreign policy and homeland security, but the specific subjects were chosen by me, the questions were composed by me, the candidates have not been told what they are, nor has anyone else. For each question, there can only be a 2-minute response, a 90-second rebuttal, and at my discretion, a discussion extension of 1 minute. A green light will come on when 30 seconds remain in any given answer, yellow at 15, red at 5 seconds, and then flashing red means time's up. There is also a backup buzzer system if needed. Candidates may not direct a question to each other. There will be 2-minute closing statements, but no opening statements. There is an audience here in the hall, but they will remain absolutely silent for the next 90 minutes, except for now, when they join me in welcoming President Bush and Senator Kerry.
Radio Nacka, vi lyssnar till den första av 3 stora debatterna för presidentposten i USA. Vi ska försöka höra så mycket som möjligt på vår sändningstimme här innan klockan 8. John Kerry och president Bush tar plats vid sina 2 pulpeter. Och Jim Leary, moderatorn, sitter vid en 3:e pulpet med ryggen mot publiken som nu tystnar.
Good evening. President, Senator Kerry, as determined by a coin toss, the first question goes to you, Senator Kerry. You have 2 minutes. Do you believe you could do a better job than President Bush in preventing another 9/11 type terrorist attack on the United States?
Yes, I do. But before I answer further, let me thank you for moderating. I want to thank the University of Miami for hosting us, and I know the President will join me in welcoming all of Florida to this debate. You've been through the roughest weeks anybody could imagine. Our hearts go out to you, and we admire your pluck and perseverance. I can make America safer than President Bush has made us. And I believe President Bush and I both love our country equally, but we just have a different set of convictions about how you make America safe. I believe America is safest and strongest when we are leading the world and when we are leading strong alliances. I'll never give a veto to any country over our security, but I also know how to lead those alliances. This president has left them in shatters across the globe, and we're now 90% of the casualties in Iraq and 90% of the costs. I think that's wrong, and I think we can do better. I have a better plan for homeland security. I have a better plan to be able to fight the war on terror by strengthening our military, strengthening our intelligence, by going after the financing more authoritatively, by doing what we need to do to rebuild the alliances, by reaching out to the Muslim world, which the president has almost not done, and beginning to isolate the radical Islamic Muslims, not have them isolate the United States of America. I know I can do a better job in Iraq, where I have a plan to have a summit with all of the allies, something this president has not yet achieved, not yet been able to do to bring people to the table. We can do a better job of training the Iraqi forces to defend themselves, and I know that we can do a better job of preparing for elections. All of these, and especially homeland security, which we'll talk about a little bit later.
Mr. President, you have 90 seconds for rebuttal.
I too thank the University of Miami and say our prayers are with the good people of this state who've suffered a lot. September the 11th changed how America must look at the world. And since that day, our nation has been on a multi-pronged strategy to keep our country safer. We pursued al-Qaeda wherever al-Qaeda tries to hide. 75% of known al-Qaeda leaders have been brought to justice. The rest of them know we're after them. We've upheld the doctrine that said if you harbor a terrorist, you're equally as guilty as a terrorist. And the Taliban no longer in power. 10 million people have registered to vote in Afghanistan in the upcoming presidential election. In Iraq, we saw a threat, and we realized that after September the 11th, we must take threats seriously before they fully materialize. Saddam Hussein now sits in a prison cell. America and the world are safer for it. We continue to pursue our policy of disrupting those who proliferate weapons of mass destruction. Libya has disarmed. The AQCON network has been brought to justice. And as well, we're pursuing a strategy of freedom around the world, because I understand free nations will reject terror. Free nations will answer the hopes and aspirations of their people. Free nations will help us achieve the peace we all want.
New question, Mr. President, 2 minutes. Do you believe the election of Senator Kerry on November the 2nd would increase the chances of the U.S. being hit by another 9/11 type terrorist attack?
No, I don't believe it's going to happen. I believe I'm going to win because the American people know I know how to lead. I've shown the American people I know how to lead. I understand everybody in this country doesn't agree with the decisions I made. And I made some tough decisions. But people know where I stand. People out there listening know what I believe. And that's how best it is to keep the peace. This nation of ours has got a solemn duty to defeat this ideology of hate. And that's what they are. This is a group of killers who will not only kill here, but kill children in Russia, that'll attack unmercifully in Iraq, hoping to shake our will. We have a duty to defeat this enemy. We have a duty to protect our children and grandchildren. The best way to defeat them is to never waver, to be strong, to use every asset at our disposal. It's to constantly stay on the offensive. And at the same time, spread liberty. And that's what the people are seeing now is happening in Afghanistan. 10 million citizens have registered to vote. It's a phenomenal statistic. That if given a chance to be free, they will show up at the polls. 41% of those 10 million are women. In Iraq, no doubt about it, it's tough. Hard work. It's incredibly hard. You know why? Because an enemy realizes the stakes. The enemy understands a free Iraq will be a major defeat. in their ideology of hatred. That's why they're fighting so vociferously. They showed up in Afghanistan when they were there because they tried to beat us, and they didn't. And they're showing up in Iraq for the same reason. They're trying to defeat us. And if we lose our will, we lose. But if we remain strong and resolute, we will defeat this enemy.
90-second response, Senator Kerry.
I believe in being strong and resolute and determined. And I will hunt down and kill the terrorists wherever they are. But we also have to be smart, Jim. And smart means not diverting your attention from the real war on terror in Afghanistan against Osama bin Laden and taking it off to Iraq, where the 9/11 Commission confirms there was no connection to 9/11 itself in Saddam Hussein, and where the reason for going to war was weapons of mass destruction, not the removal of Saddam Hussein. This president has made, I regret to say, a colossal error of judgment. And judgment is what we look for in the President of the United States of America. I'm proud that important military figures are supporting me in this race. Former Chairman Joint Chiefs of Staff John Charlie Kashvili. Just yesterday, General Eisenhower's son, General John Eisenhower, endorsed me. General Admiral William Crowell. General Tony McPeak, who ran the Air Force War so effectively for his father. All believe I would make a stronger commander-in-chief. And they believe it because they know I would not take my eye off of the goal, Osama bin Laden. Unfortunately, he escaped in the mountains of Tora Bora. We had him surrounded. But we didn't use American forces, the best trained in the world, to go kill him. The president relied on Afghan warlords, and he outsourced that job, too. That's wrong.
New question, 2 minutes, Senator Kerry. Colossal misjudgments. What colossal misjudgments, in your opinion, has President Bush made in these areas?
Well, where do you want me to begin? First of all, he made the misjudgment of saying to America that he was going to build a true alliance, that he would exhaust the remedies of the United Nations and go through the inspections. In fact, he first didn't even want to do that. And it wasn't until former Secretary of State Jim Baker and General Scowcroft and others pushed publicly and said you've got to go to the UN that the president finally changed his mind. His campaign has a word for that, and went to the United Nations. Now, once there, we could have continued those inspections. We had Saddam Hussein trapped. He also promised America that he would go to war as a last resort. Those words mean something to me as somebody who's been in combat. Last resort. You got to be able to look in the eyes of families and say to those parents, I tried to do everything in my power to prevent the loss of your son and daughter. I don't believe the United States did that, and we pushed our allies aside. And so today, we are 90% of the casualties and 90% of the cost, $200 billion. $200 billion that could have been used for health care, for schools, for construction, for prescription drugs, for seniors. And it's in Iraq. And Iraq is not even the center of the focus of the war on terror. The center is Afghanistan, where, incidentally, there were more Americans killed last year than the year before, where the opium production is 75% of the world's opium production, where 40 to 60% of the economy of Afghanistan is based on opium, where the elections have been postponed 3 times. The president moved the troops, so he's got 10 times the number of troops in Iraq than he has in Afghanistan, where Osama bin Laden is. Does that mean that Saddam Hussein was 10 times more important than Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein more important than Osama bin Laden? I don't think so.
90-second response, Mr. President.
My opponent looked at the same intelligence I looked at and declared in 2002 that Saddam Hussein was a grave threat. He also said in December of 2003 that anyone who doubts that the world is safer without Saddam Hussein does not have the judgment to be president. I agree with him. The world is better off without Saddam Hussein. I was hoping diplomacy would work. I understand the serious consequences of committing our troops into harm's way. It's the hardest decision a president makes. So I went to the United Nations. I didn't need anybody to tell me to go to the United Nations. I decided to go there myself. And I went there hoping that once and for all, the free world would act in concert to get Saddam Hussein to listen to our demands. They passed a resolution that said disclose, disarm, or face serious consequences. I believe when an international body speaks, it must mean what it says. But Saddam Hussein had no intention of disarming. Why should he? He had 16 other resolutions and nothing took place. As a matter of fact, my opponent talks about inspectors. The facts are that he was systematically deceiving the inspectors. That wasn't going to work. That's kind of a pre-September 10th mentality. The hope that somehow resolutions and failed inspections would make this world a more peaceful place. He was hoping we'd turn away. But there was fortunately others beside myself who believed that we ought to take action. We did. The world is safer without Saddam Hussein.
New question, Mr. President, 2 minutes. What about Senator Kerry's point, the comparison he drew between the priorities of going after Osama bin Laden and going after Saddam Hussein?
Jim, we got the capability of doing both. As a matter of fact, this is a global effort. We're facing a group of folks who have such hatred in their heart, they'll strike anywhere with any means. And that's why it's essential that we have strong alliances, and we do. That's why it's essential that we make sure that we keep weapons of mass destruction out of the hands of people like Al-Qaeda, which we are. But to say that there's only one focus on the war on terror doesn't really understand the nature of the war on terror. Of course we're after Saddam Hussein, bin Laden. He's isolated. 75% of his people have been brought to justice. The killer and the mastermind of the September the 11th attacks, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, is in prison. We're making progress. But the front on this war is more than just one place. The Philippines. We've got help. We're helping them there to bring Al-Qaeda affiliates to justice there. And, of course, Iraq is a central part of the war on terror. That's why Zarqawi and his people are trying to fight us. Their hope is that we grow weary and we leave. The biggest disaster that could happen is that we not succeed in Iraq. We will succeed. We've got a plan to do so. And the main reason we'll succeed is because the Iraqis want to be free. I had the honor of visiting with Prime Minister Alawi. He's a strong, courageous leader. He believes in the freedom of the Iraqi people. He doesn't want U.S. leadership, however, to send mixed signals, to not stand with the Iraqi people. He believes, like I believe, that the Iraqis are ready to fight for their own freedom. They just need the help to be trained. There will be elections in January. We're spending reconstruction money. And our alliance is strong. That's the plan for victory. And when Iraq is free, America will be more secure.
Senator Kerry, 90 seconds.
The president just talked about Iraq as a center of the war on terror. Iraq was not even close to the center of the war on terror before the president invaded it. The president made the judgment to divert forces from under General Tommy Franks from Afghanistan before the Congress even approved it, to begin to prepare to go to war in Iraq. And he rushed to war in Iraq without a plan to win the peace. Now that is not the judgment that a president of the United States ought to make. You don't take America to war unless you have a plan to win the peace. You don't send troops to war without the body armor that they need. I've met kids in Ohio, parents in Wisconsin places, Iowa, where they're going out on the internet to get the state-of-the-art body gear to send to their kids. Some of them got them for birthday present. I think that's wrong. Humvees, 10,000 out of 12,000 Humvees that are over there, aren't armored. And you go visit some of those kids in the hospitals today who are maimed because they don't have the armament. This president, just, I don't know if he sees what's really happening on there. But it's getting worse by the day. More soldiers killed in June than before, more in July than June, more in August than July, more in September than in August. And now we see beheadings, and we got weapons of mass destruction crossing the border every single day, and they're blowing people up. And we don't have enough troops there.
Hey, can I respond? Let's do one of these one-minute extensions. You have 30 seconds.
Thank you, sir. First of all, what my opponent wants you to forget is that he voted to authorize the use of force and now says it's the wrong war at the wrong time at the wrong place. I don't see how you can lead this country to succeed in Iraq if you say wrong war, wrong time, wrong place. What message does that send our troops? What message does that send our allies? What message does that send the Iraqis? No, the way to win this is to be steadfast and resolved and to follow through on the plan that I've just outlined.
30 seconds.
Yes, we have to be steadfast and resolved, and I am. And I will succeed for those troops now that we're there. We have to succeed. We can't leave a failed Iraq. But that doesn't mean it wasn't a mistake of judgment to go there and take the focus off of Osama bin Laden. It was. Now we can succeed, but I don't believe this president can. I think we need a president who has the credibility to bring the allies back to the table and to do what's necessary to make it so America isn't doing this alone.
We'll come back to Iraq in a moment, but I want to come back to where I began on Homeland Security. This is a two-minute new question, Senator Kerry. As president, what would you do specifically, in addition to or differently, to increase the Homeland Security of the United States and what President Bush is doing?
Jim, let me tell you exactly what I'll do. And there are a long list of things. First of all, what kind of mixed message does it send when you've got $500 million going over to Iraq to put police officers in the streets of Iraq, and the president is cutting the COPS program in America? What kind of message does it send to be sending money to open firehouses in Iraq, but we're shutting firehouses who are the first responders here in America? The president hasn't put one nickel, not one nickel, into the effort to fix some of our tunnels and bridges and most exposed subway systems. That's why they had to close down the subway in New York when the Republican convention was there. We hadn't done the work that ought to be done. The president, 95% of the containers that come into the ports right here in Florida are not inspected. Civilians get onto aircraft and their luggage is x-rayed, but the cargo hold is not x-rayed. Does that make you feel safer in America? This president thought it was more important to give the wealthiest people in America a tax cut rather than invest in Homeland Security. Those aren't my values. I believe in protecting America first. And long before President Bush and I get a tax cut, and that's who gets it, long before we do, I'm going to invest in Homeland Security, and I'm going to make sure we're not cutting COPS programs in America, and we're fully staffed in our firehouses, and that we protect the nuclear and chemical plants. The president also, unfortunately, gave in to the chemical industry, which didn't want to do some of the things necessary to strengthen our chemical plant exposure. And there's an enormous undone job to protect the loose nuclear materials in the world that are able to get to terrorists. That's a whole other subject, but I see we still have a little bit more time. Let me just quickly say, at the current pace, the president will not secure the loose material in the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, for 13 years. I'm going to do it in 4 years, and we're going to keep it out of the hands of terrorists.
90-second response, Mr. President.
I don't think we want to get to how he's going to pay for all these promises. It's like a huge tax gap, and anyway, that's for another debate. My administration has tripled the amount of money we're spending on Homeland Security to $30 billion a year. My administration worked with the Congress to create the Department of Homeland Security so we could better coordinate our borders and ports. We got 1,000 extra border patrol on the southern border, more than 1,000 on the northern border. We're modernizing our borders. We spent $3.1 billion for fire and police, $3.1 billion. Now, we're doing our duty to provide the funding. But the best way to protect this homeland is to stay on the offense. You know, we have to be right 100% of the time. And the enemy only has to be right once to hurt us. There's a lot of good people working hard. And by the way, we've also changed the culture of the FBI to have counterterrorism as its number one priority. We're communicating better. We're going to reform our intelligence services to make sure that we get the best intelligence possible. The Patriot Act is vital. It's vital that the Congress renew the Patriot Act, which enables our law enforcement to disrupt terrorist cells. But again, I repeat to my fellow citizens, the best way to protect you is to stay on the offense.
Hey, yes, let's do a little. Yes, 30 seconds.
The president just said the FBI had changed its culture. We just read on the front pages of America's papers that there are over 100,000 hours of tapes unlistened to. On one of those tapes may be the enemy being right the next time. And the test is not whether you're spending more money. The test is, are you doing everything possible to make America safe? We didn't need that tax cut. America needed to be safe.
Of course we've done everything we can to protect America. I wake up every day thinking about how best to protect America. That's my job. I work with Director Mueller of the FBI. He comes into my office when I'm in Washington every morning talking about how to protect us. There's a lot of really good people working hard to do so. It's hard work. But again, I want to tell the American people, we're doing everything we can at home, but you better have a president who chases these terrorists down and bring them to justice before they hurt us again.
New question, Mr. President, 2 minutes. What criteria would you use to determine when to start bringing U.S. troops home from Iraq?
Let me first tell you that the best way for Iraq to be safe and secure is for Iraqi citizens to be trained to do the job, and that's what we're doing. We've got 100,000 trained now, 125,000 by the end of this year, over 200,000 by the end of next year. That is the best way. We'll never succeed in Iraq if the Iraqi citizens do not want to take matter in their own hands and protect themselves. I believe they want to. Prime Minister Alawi believes they want to. And so the best indication about when we can bring our troops home, which I really want to do, but I don't want to do so for the sake of bringing them home. I want to do so because we've achieved an objective, is to see the Iraqis perform, is to see the Iraqis step up and take responsibility. And so the answer to your question is, when our generals on the ground and Ambassador Negroponte tells me that Iraq is ready to defend herself from these terrorists, that elections will have been held by then, that there's stability, and that they're on their way to, you know, a nation of that's free. That's when. And I hope it's as soon as possible. But I know putting artificial deadlines won't work. My opponent one time said, well, get me elected, I'll have them out of there in 6 months. That's, you can't do that and expect to win the war on terror. My message to our troops is, thank you for what you're doing. We're standing with you strong. We'll give you all the equipment you need. And we'll get you home as soon as the mission's done, because this is a vital mission. A free Iraq will be an ally in the war on terror, and that's essential. A free Iraq will set a powerful example in the part of the world that is desperate for freedom. A free Iraq will help secure Israel. A free Iraq will enforce the hopes and aspirations of the reformers in places like Iran. A free Iraq is essential for the security of this country.
90 seconds, Senator Kerry.
Thank you, Jim. My message to the troops is also thank you for what they're doing, but it's also help is on the way. I believe those troops deserve better than what they are getting today. You know, it's interesting, when I was in a rope line just the other day coming out here from Wisconsin, a couple of young returnees were in the line, one active duty, one from the guard. And they both looked at me and said, we need you. You got to help us over there. Now, I believe there's a better way to do this. You know, the president's father did not go into Iraq, into Baghdad, beyond Basra. And the reason he didn't is, he said, he wrote in his book, because there was no viable exit strategy. And he said our troops would be occupiers in a bitterly hostile land. That's exactly where we find ourselves today. There's a sense of American occupation. The only building that was guarded when the troops went into Baghdad was the oil ministry. We didn't guard the nuclear facilities. We didn't guard the foreign office, where you might have found information about weapons of mass destruction. We didn't guard the borders. Almost every step of the way, our troops have been left on these extraordinarily difficult missions. I know what it's like to go out on one of those missions where you don't know what's around the corner. And I believe our troops need other allies helping. I'm going to hold that summit. I will bring fresh credibility, a new start, and we will get the job done right.
Yeah. All right, go ahead. Yes, sir.
I think it's worthy for a follow-up.
Sure.
If you don't mind.
Sure.
Okay. Let's change rules. We can have a whole
We can do 30 seconds each here. All right.
My opponent says help is on the way, but what kind of message is to say to our troops in harm's way, wrong war, wrong place, wrong time? That's not a message a commander-in-chief gives, or this is a great diversion. As well, help is on the way, but it's certainly hard to tell it when he voted against the $87 billion supplemental to provide equipment for our troops, and then said he actually did vote for it before he voted against it. It's not what commander-in-chief does when you're trying to lead troops.
Senator Kerry, 30 seconds.
Well, you know, when I talked about the $87 billion, I made a mistake in how I talk about the war. But the president made a mistake in invading Iraq. Which is worse? I believe that when you know something's going wrong, you make it right. That's what I learned in Vietnam. When I came back from that war, I saw that it was wrong. Some people don't like the fact that I stood up to say no, but I did. And that's what I did with that vote, and I'm going to lead those troops to victory.
All right, new question, 2 minutes, Senator Kerry. Speaking of Vietnam, you spoke to Congress in 1971 after you came back from Vietnam, and you said, quote, "How do you ask a man to be the last man to die for a mistake? Are Americans now dying in Iraq for a mistake?"
No, and they don't have to, providing we have the leadership that we put, that I'm offering. I believe that we have to win this. President and I have always agreed on that. And from the beginning, I did vote to give the authority because I thought Saddam Hussein was a threat. And I did accept that that intelligence. But I also laid out a very strict series of things we needed to do in order to proceed from a position of strength. And the president, in fact, promised them. He went to Cincinnati and he gave a speech in which he said, "We will plan carefully. We will proceed cautiously. We will not make war inevitable. We will go with our allies." He didn't do any of those things. They didn't do the planning. They left the planning of the State Department and the State Department desks. They avoided even the advice of their own general, General Shinseki, the Army Chief of Staff, said, "You're going to need several hundred thousand troops." Instead of listening to him, they retired him. The terrorism czar, who has worked for every president since Ronald Reagan, said, "Invading Iraq in response to 9/11 would be like Franklin Roosevelt invading Mexico in response to Pearl Harbor." That's what we have here. And what we need now is a president who understands how to bring these other countries together to recognize their stakes in this. They do have stakes in it. They've always had stakes in it. The Arab countries have a stake in not having a civil war. The European countries have a stake in not having total disorder on their doorstep. But this president has even held the kind of statesman-like summits that pull people together and get them to invest in those states. In fact, he's done the opposite. He pushed them away. When the Secretary General Kofi Annan offered the United Nations, he said, "No, no, we'll go do this alone." To save for Halliburton the spoils of the war, they actually issued a memorandum from the Defense Department saying, "If you weren't with us in the war, don't bother applying for any construction." That's not a way to invite people.
97.
That's totally absurd. Of course the UN was invited in. And we support the UN efforts there. They pulled out after Sergio de Mello got killed, but they're now back in helping with elections. My opponent says we didn't have any allies in this war. What's he say to Tony Blair? What's he say to Alexander Kwasniewski of Poland? I mean, you can't expect to build alliance when you denigrate the contributions of those who are serving side by side with American troops in Iraq. Plus, he says the cornerstone of his plan to succeed in Iraq is to call upon nations to serve. So what's the message going to be? Please join us in Iraq for a grand diversion? Join us for a war that is the wrong war at the wrong place at the wrong time? I know how these people think. I deal with them all the time. I sit down with the world leaders frequently and talk to them on the phone frequently. They're not going to follow somebody who says this is the wrong war at the wrong place at the wrong time. They're not going to follow somebody whose core convictions keep changing because of politics in America. And finally, he says we ought to have a summit where there are summits being held. Japan is going to have a summit for the donors. $14 billion pledge, and Prime Minister Koizumi is going to call countries to account to get them to contribute. And there's going to be an Arab summit of the neighborhood countries. And Colin Powell helped set up that summit.
30 seconds, Senator.
The United Nations, Kofi Annan, offered help after Baghdad fell. And we never picked them up on that and did what was necessary to transfer authority and to transfer reconstruction. It was always American run. Secondly, when we went in, there were three countries, Great Britain, Australia, and the United States. That's not a grand coalition. We can do better.
30 seconds.
Well, actually, you forgot Poland. And now there's 30 nations involved, standing side by side with our American troops. and I honor their sacrifices, and I don't appreciate it when a candidate for president denigrates the contributions of these brave soldiers. You cannot lead the world if you do not honor the contributions of those with us. He called them the coerced and the bribed. That's not how you bring people together. Our coalition is strong. It'll remain strong so long as I'm the president.
New question, Mr. President. 2 minutes. You have said there was a, quote, miscalculation of what the conditions would be in post-war Iraq. What was the miscalculation, and how did it happen?
No, what I said was that because we achieved such a rapid victory, more of the Saddam loyalists were around. In other words, we thought we'd whip more of them going in. But because Tommy Franks did such a great job in planning the operations, we moved rapidly. And a lot of the Baathists and Saddam loyalists laid down their arms and disappeared. I thought we would they would stay and fight. But they didn't, and now we're fighting them now. And it's hard work. I understand how hard it is. I get the casualty reports every day. I see on the TV screens how hard it is. But it's necessary work. And I'm optimistic. See, I think you can be realistic and optimistic at the same time. I'm optimistic we'll achieve. I know we won't achieve if we send mixed signals. I know we're not going to achieve our objective if we send mixed signals to our troops, our friends, the Iraqi citizens. We've got a plan in place. The plan says there'll be elections in January, and there will be. The plan says we'll train Iraqi soldiers so they can do the hard work, and we are. And it's not only just America, but NATO is now helping. Jordan's helping train police. UAE is helping train police. We've allocated $7 billion over the next months for reconstruction efforts, and we're making progress there. And our alliance is strong. Now, they just told you there's going to be a summit of the Arab nations. Japan will be hosting a summit. We're making progress. It is hard work. It is hard work to go from a tyranny to a democracy. It's hard work to go from a place where people get their hands cut off or executed to a place where people are free. But it's necessary work, and a free Iraq is going to make this world a more peaceful place.
90 seconds, Senator Kerry.
What I think troubles a lot of people in our country is that the president has just sort of described one kind of mistake. But what he has said is that even knowing there were no weapons of mass destruction, even knowing there was no imminent threat, even knowing there was no connection of Al-Qaeda, he would still have done everything the same way. Those are his words. Now, I would not. So what I'm trying to do is just talk the truth to the American people and to the world. The truth is what good policy is based on. It's what leadership is based on. The president says that I'm denigrating these troops. I have nothing but respect for the British, for Tony Blair, and for what they've been willing to do. But you can't tell me that when the most troops any other country has on the ground is Great Britain with 8,300, and below that the four others are below 4,000, and below that there isn't anybody out of the hundreds, that we have a genuine coalition to get this job done. You can't tell me that on the day that we went into that war and it started, it was principally the United States, the America, and Great Britain, and one or two others. That's it. And today we are 90% of the casualties and 90% of the costs. And meanwhile, North Korea has gotten nuclear weapons. Talk about mixed messages. The president is the one who said we can't allow countries to get nuclear weapons. They have. I'll change that.
New question, Senator Kerry, 2 minutes. You've repeatedly accused President Bush, not here tonight but elsewhere before, of not telling the truth about Iraq, essentially of lying to the American people about Iraq. Give us some examples of what you consider to be his not telling the truth.
Well, I've never ever used the harshest word, as you did just then, and I try not to. But I'll nevertheless tell you that I think he has not been candid with the American people, and I'll tell you exactly how. First of all, we all know that in his State of the Union message, he told Congress about nuclear materials that didn't exist. We know that he promised America that he was going to build this coalition. I just described the coalition. It is not the kind of coalition we were described when we were talking about voting for this. The president said he would exhaust the remedies of the United Nations and go through that full process. He didn't. He cut it off, sort of arbitrarily. And we know that there were further diplomatics efforts underway. They just decided the time for diplomacy is over and rushed to war without planning for what happens afterwards. Now, he misled the American people in his speech when he said, we will plan carefully. They obviously didn't. He misled the American people when he said, we'd go to war as a last resort. We did not go as a last resort. And most Americans know the difference. Now, this has cost us deeply in the world. I believe that it is important to tell the truth to the American people. I've worked with those leaders the president talks about. I've worked with them for 20 years, for longer than this president. And I know what many of them say today, and I know how to bring them back to the table. And I believe that fresh start, new credibility, a president who can understand what we have to do to reach out to the Muslim world, to make it clear that this is not, you know, Osama bin Laden uses the invasion of Iraq in order to go out to people and say, the America has declared war on Islam. We need to be smarter about how we wage a war on terror. We need to deny them the recruits. We need to deny them the safe havens. We need to rebuild our alliances. I believe that Ronald Reagan, John Kennedy, others did that more effectively, and I'm going to try to follow in their footsteps.
90 seconds, Mr. President.
Well, my opponent just said something amazing. He said Osama bin Laden uses the invasion of Iraq as an excuse to spread hatred for America. Osama bin Laden going to determine how we defend ourselves? Osama bin Laden doesn't get to decide. The American people decide. I decided the right action was in Iraq. My opponent calls it a mistake. It wasn't a mistake. He said I misled on Iraq. I don't think he was misleading when he called Iraq a grave threat in the fall of 2002. I don't think he was misleading when he said that it was right to disarm Iraq in the spring of 2003. I don't think he misled you when he said that, you know, anyone who doubted whether the world was better off without Saddam Hussein in power didn't have the judgment to be president. I don't think he was misleading. I think what is misleading is to say you can lead and succeed in Iraq if you keep changing your positions on this war, and he has. As the politics change, his positions change. And that's not how a commander-in-chief acts. Let me finish. The intelligence I looked at was the same intelligence my opponent looked at. The very same intelligence. And when I stood up there and spoke to the Congress, I was speaking off the same intelligence he looked at to make his decision to support the authorization of force.
30 seconds. We'll do a 30-second here.
I wasn't misleading when I said it was a threat. Nor was I misleading on the day that the president decided to go to war when I said that he had made a mistake in not building strong alliances and that I would have preferred that he did more diplomacy. I've had one position, one consistent position, that Saddam Hussein was a threat, there was a right way to disarm him, and a wrong way. And the president chose the wrong way.
30 seconds, Mr. President.
The only thing consistent about my opponent's position is that he's been inconsistent. He changes positions. And you cannot change positions in this war on terror if you expect to win. And I expect to win. It's necessary we win. We're being challenged like never before. And we have a duty to our country and to future generations of America to achieve a free Iraq, a free Afghanistan, and to rid the world of weapons of mass destruction.
New question, Mr. President. 2 minutes. Has the war in Iraq been worth the cost in American lives? 1,052 as of today.
No, every life is precious. Every life matters. You know, the hardest part of the job is to know that I committed the troops in harm's way and then do the best I can to provide comfort for the loved ones who lost it. A son or a daughter, a husband and wife. And, you know, I think about Missy Johnson's fantastic young lady I met in Charlotte, North Carolina. She and her son, Brian, they came to see me. Her husband, PJ, got killed. He'd been in Afghanistan, went to Iraq. You know, it's hard work to try to love her as best as I can, knowing full well that the decision I made caused her loved one to be in harm's way. I told her after we prayed and teared up and laughed some that I thought her husband's sacrifice was noble and worthy, because I understand the stakes of this war on terror. I understand that we must find Al-Qaeda wherever they hide. We must deal with threats before they fully materialize, and Saddam Hussein was a threat. And that we must spread liberty, because in the long run, the way to defeat hatred and tyranny and oppression is to spread freedom. Missy understood that. That's what she told me her husband understood. So you say, was it worth it? It wasn't. It's every life is precious. That's what distinguishes us from the enemy. Everybody matters. But I think it's worth it, Jim. I think it's worth it, because I know in the long term, a free Iraq, a free Afghanistan will set such a powerful example in the part of the world that's desperate for freedom, that will help change the world, that we can look back and say we did our duty.
Senator, 90 seconds.
I understand what the president is talking about, because I know what it means to lose people in combat. And the question, is it worth the cost, reminds me of my own thinking when I came back from fighting in that war. And it reminds me that it is vital for us not to confuse the war ever with the warriors. That happened before. And that's one of the reasons why I believe I can get this job done. Because I am determined for those soldiers and for those families, for those kids who put their lives on the line. That is noble. That's the most noble thing that anybody can do. And I want to make sure the outcome honors that nobility. Now, we have a choice here. I've laid out a plan by which I think we can be successful in Iraq with the summit, by doing better training faster, by doing what we need to do with respect to the UN and the elections. There's only 25% of the people in there. They can't have an election right now. The president's not getting the job done. So the choice for America is, you can have a plan that I've laid out in 4 points, each of which I can tell you more about, or you can go to johnkerry.com and see more of it, or you have the president's plan, which is 4 words, more of the same. I think my plan is better. And my plan has a better chance of standing up and fighting for those troops. I will never let those troops down, and will hunt and kill the terrorists wherever they are.
Excuse me, quick. All right, sir, go ahead. 30 seconds.
Yeah, I understand what it means to be the commander-in-chief, and if I were to ever say, this is the wrong war at the wrong time at the wrong place, the troops would wonder, how can I follow this guy? You cannot lead the war on terror if you keep changing positions on the war on terror and say things like, well, this is just a grand diversion. It's not a grand diversion. This is an essential that we get it right. And so the plan he talks about simply won't work.
Senator Kerry, you have 30 seconds, right.
Then Secretary of State Colin Powell told this president the Pottery Barn rule. If you break it, you fix it. Now, if you break it, you made a mistake. It's the wrong thing to do. But you own it. And then you got to fix it and do something with it. Now, that's what we have to do. There's no inconsistency. Soldiers know over there that this isn't being done right yet. I'm going to get it right for those soldiers, because it's important to Israel. It's important to America. It's important to the world. It's important to the fight on terror. But I have a plan to do it. He doesn't.
Speaking of your plan, new question, Senator Kerry, 2 minutes. Can you give us specifics in terms of a scenario, timelines, et cetera, for ending major U.S. military involvement in Iraq?
The timeline that I've set out, and again, I want to correct the president because he's misled again this evening on what I said. I didn't say I would bring troops out in 6 months. I said, if we do the things that I've set out and we are successful, we could begin to draw the troops down in 6 months. And I think a critical component of success in Iraq is being able to convince the Iraqis and the Arab world that the United States doesn't have long-term designs on it. As I understand it, we're building some 14 military bases there now, and some people say they've got a rather permanent concept to them. When you guard the oil ministry but you don't guard the nuclear facilities, the message to a lot of people is maybe, wow, maybe they're interested in our oil. Now, the problem is that they didn't think these things through properly, and these are the things you have to think through. What I want to do is change the dynamics on the ground. And you have to do that by beginning to not back off of Fallujah and other places and send the wrong message to the terrorists. You have to close the borders. You've got to show you're serious in that regard, but you've also got to show that you're prepared to bring the rest of the world in and share the stakes. I will make a flat statement. The United States of America has no long-term designs on staying in Iraq. And our goal in my administration would be to get all of the troops out of there with the minimal amount you need for training and logistics, as we do in some other countries in the world after a war, to be able to sustain the peace. But that's how we're going to win the peace, by rapidly training the Iraqis themselves. Even the administration has admitted they haven't done the training, because they came back to Congress a few weeks ago and asked for a complete reprogramming of the money. Now, what greater admission is there? 16 months afterwards, oops, we haven't done the job. We've got to start to spend the money now. Will you guys give us permission to shift it over into training?
90 seconds.
There's 100,000 troops trained, police, guard, special units, border patrol. There's going to be 125,000 trained by the end of this year. Yeah, we're getting the job done. It's hard work. Everybody knows it's hard work because there's a determined enemy that's trying to defeat us. Now, my opponent says he's going to try to change the dynamics on the ground. Well, Prime Minister Alawi was here. He is the leader of that country. He's a brave, brave man. And when he came, after giving a speech to Congress, my opponent questioned his credibility. You can't change the dynamics on the ground. If you've criticized the brave leader of Iraq, one of his campaign people alleged that Prime Minister Alawi was like a puppet. There's no way to treat somebody who's courageous and brave that is trying to lead its country forward. The way to make sure that we succeed is to send consistent, sound messages to the Iraqi people that when we give our word, we will keep our word. That we stand with you, that we believe you want to be free, and I do. I believe that 25 million people, the vast majority, long to have elections. I reject this notion, and I'm not suggesting that my opponent says it, but I reject the notion that some say that if you're Muslim, you can't be free, you don't desire freedom. I disagree, strongly disagree with that.
30 seconds.
I couldn't agree more that the Iraqis want to be free and that they could be free. But I think the president, again, still hasn't shown how he's going to go about it the right way. He has more of the same. Now, Prime Minister Alawi came here and he said the terrorists are pouring over the border. That's Alawi's assessment. The national intelligence assessment that was given to the president in July said, best case scenario, more of the same of what we see today. Worst case scenario, civil war. I can do better.
Yeah, let me...
Yes, 30 seconds.
The reason why Prime Minister Alawi said they're coming across the border is because he recognizes that this is a central part of the war on terror. They're fighting us because they're fighting freedom. They understand that a free Afghanistan or a free Iraq will be a major defeat for them. And those are the stakes. And that's why it is essential we not leave. That's why it's essential we hold the line. That's why it's essential we win. And we will, under my leadership, we're going to win this war in Iraq.
Mr. President, new question, 2 minutes. Does the Iraq experience make it more likely or less likely that you would take the United States into another preemptive military action?
I would hope I'd never have to. Understand how hard it is to commit troops. I never wanted to commit troops. When we had the debate in 2000, never dreamt I'd be doing that. But the enemy attacked us, Jim, and... I have a solemn duty to protect the American people, to do everything I can to protect us. I think that by speaking clearly and doing what we say and not sending mixed messages, it is less likely we'll ever have to use troops. But a president must always be willing to use troops. It must, as a last resort. I was hopeful diplomacy would work in Iraq. It was falling apart. There was no doubt in my mind that Saddam Hussein was hoping that the world would turn a blind eye. And if he had been in power, in other words, we had said, let's let the inspectors work, or let's, you know, hope to talk him out. Maybe an 18th resolution would work. He'd have been stronger and tougher, and the world would have been a lot worse off. There's just no doubt in my mind. We would rue the day if Saddam Hussein had been in power. So we use diplomacy every chance we get. Believe me. I would hope to never have to use force. But by speaking clearly and sending messages that we mean what we say, we've affected the world in a positive way. Look at Libya. Libya was a threat. Libya is now peacefully dismantling its weapons programs. Libya understood that America and others will enforce doctrine, and the world is better for it. So to answer your question, I would hope we never have to. I think by acting firmly and decisively, it's less likely we have to use force.
Senator Kerry, 90 seconds.
Jim, the president just said something extraordinarily revealing and frankly very important in this debate. In answer to your question about Iraq and sending people into Iraq, he just said, the enemy attacked us. Saddam Hussein didn't attack us. Osama bin Laden attacked us. Al-Qaeda attacked us. And when we had Osama bin Laden cornered in the mountains of Tora Bora, 1,000 of his cohorts with him in those mountains, with the American military forces nearby and in the field, we didn't use the best trained troops in the world to go kill the world's number one criminal and terrorist. They outsourced the job to Afghan warlords who only a week earlier had been on the other side fighting against us, neither of whom trusted each other. That's the enemy that attacked us. That's the enemy that was allowed to walk out of those mountains. That's the enemy that is now in 60 countries with stronger recruits. He also said Saddam Hussein would have been stronger. That is just factually incorrect. Two-thirds of the country was a no-fly zone when we started this war. We would have had sanctions. We would have had the UN inspectors. Saddam Hussein would have been continually weakening. If the president had shown the patience to go through another round of resolution, to sit down with those leaders, say, what do you need? What do you need now? How much more will it take to get you to join us? We'd be in a stronger place today.
Och John Kerry fick sista ordet. Vi lämnar där debatten som sändes för 4 timmar sedan, avslutades för 2,5 timmar sedan. Ja, nästan 3,5 timmar sedan. Det är alltså John Kerry och George Bush som håller den första av 3 stora debatter inför valet till presidentposten. Det här är Radio Nacka 99,9 fredagen den 1 oktober 2004 klockan 1:08. Vi ska avsluta sändningen här. Vi har hört 55 minuter utav ungefär 1,5 timme utav denna debatt. Så att imorgon kanske jag spelar upp de återstående 35 minuterna. Jag tyckte det var intressant att spela upp debatten oredigerad och i sin, så mycket man kunde i sin helhet. Jag heter Lasse Lundberg, det är Radio Nacka 99,9 och man kan även höra oss på radiolars.com. Hans utgivare är radioföreningen Nacka. Nu är klockan 8 så vi säger tack och adjö. Ha det så jättebra i alla fall. 8,3 grader i Nacka, mulet och disigt. Ha det så bra.